Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CPRMetro.org. I hope you're having a wonderful 2014 so far. Anyway, our topic today is important to the state of California, but obviously it's important globally. It's about water rights, access to water, and access to water as a human right. Many people believe that our very near future wars will be fought over access to water, large aquifers, and, you know, etc. So our guest today is Alexandra Nagy, and she's a young activist and organizer with Food and Water Watch. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Alexandra.
Alexandra Nagy, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you for having me.
So you are part of the food. can you tell me again? I don't have it right in front of me. What's your organization?
Of course. We're called Food and Water Watch, and we're a consumer advocacy organization that works to protect our food and water and make sure that it's safe and accessible. And I'm the Southern California organizer for Food and Water Watch.
Great. And you have a project called Stop the Tunnels. And it's a coalition called Californians for a Fair Water Policy. What is the Twin Tunnels Project? I found I was really surprised when I announced that I was going to run for governor this year. Most of my inquiries have been about this so-called Bay Delta Conservation Project. And there's a lot of confusion and propaganda because I think that that's what the proponents of it want. But can you tell my listeners about it?
Absolutely. So the Bay Delta Conservation Plan is this huge proposal for a state water project. And the key component of this are the Twin Tunnel Project. And so the Bay Delta Conservation Plan is really twofold. It's one, building these two twin tunnels, which will divert the Sacramento River out of the Bay Delta and down to the pumping stations so that we can get more direct access to water for corporate agribusiness and fracking developers in Kern County. The other aspect of it is the conservation, but that's really just kind of a smoke and mirrors attempt to approve the privatization of one of the last standing biggest rivers that we have in California, which is the Sacramento River. And so the two twin tunnels specifically are going to be 35-mile long and 40-foot wide. And this will really maximize the exports from the Sacramento and San Francisco Bay Delta. And it's very similar to the project that was previously proposed in 1982, which was the Peripheral Canal. And at that point in time, it was put on the ballot, and the voters of California voted this down because it was just really unsound water policy.
Well, I was watching a video from your colleague, and she says that in 2009, Governor Brown was given the approval to have complete control of this project, and there was no vote this time, was there?
That's correct. So in 82, when the project was initially proposed as the Peripheral Canal, it had to go to California voters to decide whether they wanted to spend the money on a project like this. But my colleague is right. In 2009, the legislature gave Governor Brown, who's back and wants to bring this project back, the sole authority to approve this project. And so now the democracy has been taken out of the issue completely, and now we're going through this very lengthy environmental impact report process. And they just released this EIR that has like 37,000 pages. It's huge. It's massive. And it still makes no sense. They still don't answer the most basic questions of what it's going to cost, who's going to pay for it, and how much water they're actually taking out of the Sacramento Delta. And so it's just really a smoke and mirrors attempt at answering all these conservation questions without really addressing how much water you're going to take, it makes no sense. And we actually have found out over the holiday break that the tunnel's proposed cost is now up to $67 billion with financing. And the officials that are in charge of this EIR process have not disputed those facts and have said, in fact, that they're accurate, but they don't want to tell the public because the public just wouldn't get it. It's too complex for them to understand. And so I think they're afraid that if the true cost of the tunnel were really revealed, the public would say, that's crazy, you can't do that. And so that was Mark Cohen, the director of the Department of Water Resources, that confirmed that $67 billion is really the price tag that we're looking at.
So you already talked about it benefiting the agribusinesses in Kern County, but talk a little bit about big oil and hydrofracturing and how and big oil donates a lot of money to Jerry Brown and his election campaigns and his little projects. But talk about how big oil would benefit from this also.
Right. So, I mean, as you may know, in California, we are going through a very dry year. And it's we've seen some of the three driest years in recorded history of the state. And so we're not only we're losing our water capacity here in California. And so that's a big concern for the farming industry. And so we have big corporate agriculture businesses like that are operated by the Westlands Water District, and they get their water from the Kearns County Water District. But they also are very close and working with big oil companies like Chevron, like Occidental, who need more water to tap the Monterey Shale, which holds 15 billion barrels of oil. That can only be recovered if it's done through hydraulic fracturing, which requires millions of gallons of water, toxic chemicals, and sand to break apart, you know, very hard rock formations miles underground. And so here in California, we're losing one of our most precious resources because of climate change, because of drought. But at the same time, we have large corporate interests coming up with these schemes, which are the Bay Delta Conservation Plant, to justify reallocating the Sacramento River water and reallocating water rights through the construction of these tunnels so that they can get their hands on even more water to develop very dirty energy. And so this is the problem, and the question that hasn't been answered is as to who is going to be paying for this project. It's always the urban water user, the people who live in cities, that will be paying the cost of this. And it's been shown, the last estimate before the $67 billion came out was anywhere between $2 and $6 billion could be paid by the city of Los Angeles alone. And those costs would be directed to the ratepayer and taxpayers. And so this is really just everyday people subsidizing corporate agriculture and the development of fracking in our state. And so our water bills are going up, and they can reap all the profits.
Yes, the water bills for the Metropolitan Water District are proposed to go up dramatically to pay for this project. Is that true of places like, you know, Oakland, Sacramento, San Jose? Will those ratepayers also be footing part of this bill? And it's actually subsidizing big agribusiness and big oil. We'll be subsidizing them again with our taxpayer money.
Yeah, and I think
ratepayer money.
Right. So when it comes to ratepayer and taxpayer money, it really depends on who the biggest consumers are from the state projects. But everyone will be affected by this. More specifically, Southern California will be affected by this in terms of cost, because the Metropolitan Water District, which is the wholesale water retailer for the SoCal region, has the authority to raise taxes to pay for statewide projects. And then they also have the authority to pass on costs down to, you know, the retail water agencies like the Department of Water and Power for Los Angeles. And so everyone will be affected by this, but MET especially wants to finance this project so that they can you know, remain in business, basically.
Well, and as your organization has pointed out, and as the Californians for a Fair Water Policy has pointed out, water consumption in Los Angeles is lower than it was 30 years ago, but there's a million more people there. So there's other and Los Angeles isn't even going to get any of this water, are they?
No, we are not. And I've actually heard that from the general manager that's currently the current general manager for the LA Department of Water and Power, Rob Nichols, had a meeting with him, and he said that to me personally, saying that we're not going to see any more water for this, but we really view it as an insurance plan. Well, I think that that is totally ridiculous, because we have a plan within LA to move towards reducing imports and increasing local supply, and it just makes so much more sense in terms of climate change, in terms of drought, being able to, you know, really shore up the supplies that we have locally. First of all, it costs less money, and so it is a smaller burden to the ratepayers, and it also creates local jobs and improves the economy. And so it's a win-win sustainable solution to invest in local water, which is our plan. But at the same time, DWP is walking this really strange fine line of advocating for the Bay Delta Conservation Plan and the Twin Tunnels Project. And so it's been our job to really call them out on that and work with City Council to work to divest from this project, because if urban water payers won't pay for this, then we think we can actually defeat this project overall, which is what we want, because the conservation aspect of it is really a last-minute thought. First, they're going to divert all the fresh water out of the Delta, and then they'll find the money to, you know, restore the habitat. And so it's a totally, it has the potential to be an amazing environmental disaster.
Well, and also the name of the entire project, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, is very Orwellian.
Right. It's very misleading.
As always. So, I had a question come up while you were talking about that. I should have written it down. I know what I was going to ask. I lived in Los Angeles. I was born there, and I lived there until 20 years ago, and I moved up to Northern California. And we went through, like, 8 years of a terrible drought right before we moved. And there were many conservation plans that we, the water consumer, were told, like, don't water your lawn, use gray water and things like that. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. All of those wonderful things. And how has Los Angeles been able to cut its water consumption? Because Los Angeles is basically a desert. Las Vegas was built on a desert. And, you know, so a lot of water that can be used for other things are being diverted to these huge metropolitan areas that are built in deserts. So what are ways that Los Angeles has been able to conserve water and would be far better for our economy and for our environment and for this huge issue of water and water rights? That has long plagued the state since it's become a state. What has Los Angeles been able to do, and what can, how can other communities model what LA's been able to do?
Right. So since the 80s, when we really were going through this drought and realized we had to make a drastic change, what we did was some of the simple things we did was any new buildings that had to be constructed had to be water efficient. Also emphasizing native landscapes, giving people incentives to actually change their grass landscaping to native landscaping, and getting more water that falls, you know, naturally when we do get rain, to get that to actually go into our groundwater aquifers. And there's still so much to be done in Los Angeles. I mean, for California as a whole, you'd be surprised to know that SoCal and Los Angeles actually conserve more water than our neighbors in Northern California, but we still are far behind countries like Australia or Israel that have very similar, like, desert arid regions, but they even use less water. So we have a long ways to go. And some of the movements here in Los Angeles are focused around things like the LA River, restoring that, because the Army Corps of Engineers channelized those rivers and made them concrete. And that has turned out to be really bad for conserving water here. So what we do is we throw all of our good water away straight to the ocean, and we don't capture it, and we don't recycle it. And so there are so many things that we can be doing in the future. And we've actually, the DWP has announced that they're going to build a groundwater treatment plant. And it's these types of infrastructure projects that will bring local jobs to LA, will improve our economy, and then will make us more sustainable in a space of continued drought and climate change. And so although we've been doing really great, we still have a lot of room to go and a lot to do.
Yeah, I live literally two blocks away from the San Gabriel, quote-unquote, river that was concretized. And some years when we did have, like, El Nino and a lot of rain, it would be almost all the way up to the top and flowing straight to the ocean. All of that water going from the mountains to the ocean and just losing all of that water. So we live in California, and even though it's, you know, not as big of a problem as some people in the rest of the country think, what about earthquakes and what threat does that pose to the water supply? And also, since you do are active against fracking, talk about that earthquake, the potential for increased earthquakes because of that.
Sure. So I think earthquakes in the discussion of the tunnels really first came in from the proponents who are advocating for the tunnels. They're really trying to scare Los Angeles and Southern California and say, hey, look, if there's an earthquake in the Delta region, it's going to collapse the levees, the ocean water will rush in, and your water supply will be out for 2 years. And it just sounds totally apocalyptic, totally scary. It's not true at all. I mean, the Delta region has faced many earthquakes. Even though the levees are 150 years old, they have been able to withstand these earthquakes. And then the funny thing about it is that the Delta Conservation Plan does nothing to address the levees. And there's $2 billion in bonds available to fix the levees. So it's one thing to say that this is why we need the project, but then another thing when they don't even want to address it at all. And the reality is, you know, there's no pipeline that we can build that will be, impervious to some kind of earthquake potential damage. And in reality, Los Angeles and the SoCal region is at a greater threat for an earthquake than the Northern California region. And so because of that, we need to really make sure that we fix our local water infrastructure. You know, we have 1,400 to 1,500 water mains in Los Angeles break every year. It's just a very old system. It's something that we need to really invest to update so that we can withstand earthquakes and infrastructure potential loss. And then with earthquakes and fracking, I mean, like I said, fracking requires millions of gallons of water that's then laced with these toxic chemicals, which are like lubricants to help break up the rock. The problem is that once you frack, this water is so hazardous that one of the ways that you can dispose of it is by injecting it back into the ground, because you can't recycle it. We just don't have the technology or capacity to recycle this water. And so we throw it away in the ground. And so that is what's actually causing the earthquakes in places like Ohio, where they don't have the kind of seismic context that we do in California. They're seeing a tripling of small earthquakes. They've even had a 4.0 scale earthquake where they've never had earthquakes in settled history. And so when we're taking that kind of practice and bringing it here to California, where you can't, you know, you just look at a fault line map and it looks like it's just been, you know, colored on. It's amazing that we're willing to take that kind of risk here, especially when we're coming up on the 20th year anniversary of the Northridge earthquake that just caused amazing infrastructure damage and caused the loss of people's lives. And so that's a really important point that we want our elected leaders here in California to understand, is that we're not just doing fracking, but we're creating the potential for very serious earthquakes. And so that's one of the big reasons why we're totally against it.
And you did say that if, you know, the MWD in L.A., the government concentrated on Los Angeles upgrades in the systems and the infrastructure, you would create jobs. But one of the things that the proponents of the tunnels are saying is that it will create lots of jobs. And so what is your response to that?
My response is that, you know, for Los Angeles, it makes no sense to spend our money, our funding that we have on a project that will not even affect us, that will not even bring us any benefit. It won't bring us any jobs, and it won't bring us any water. And actually, infrastructure projects that are built locally have the highest multiplier effect. So for every $1 that is invested in local water infrastructure projects, 99% of that stays local. And so it really is a smarter solution for localities to invest locally in their water supply. And that way you're saving the money that you need and spending it where you need it. For Los Angeles, so many people are worried that if this tunnels tax comes down on them, nobody's going to want to turn around and then say, oh, yeah, let's do groundwater, or let's capture stormwater, or let's do this, because people will be exhausted and out of money, because a lot of this is coming out of the individual's pocket. And so it's just a really unjust way of dealing with our water problems as a blanket statewide solution. It's just not feasible. That's the, you know, kind of ideology of the past, and it's not going to bring us into this kind of resistant and sustainable future that we need to be in when it comes to water in the face of climate change and drought.
Well, one of the main issues that I see traveling around the world and in our own country is many communities have made it against the law to capture rainwater. And I was in Okinawa, Japan, and every single building has a huge cistern on top of it to capture rainwater. I know that's an issue in many communities, but is that an issue here in California at all?
Meaning, is that something that we're trying to be doing here in California?
Well, is it against the law to recapture rainwater? Because it is in other places of the country, but I haven't really heard that from California. And is that something that you try to advocate for?
Yeah, it's absolutely something we advocate for, and I'm pretty sure it's not illegal. I see a bunch of places around LA that are doing it, but I'm not 100% sure on the permits or the coding that's required. But it's capturing rainwater, putting more water into our groundwater to clean it up. You know, looking into gray water systems, looking into, you know, landscaping or xeriscaping that requires very little water. Recycling, cleaning up groundwater. There's so many things that we can be doing. And it's about making the policies that allow for Californians to easily access these kinds of solutions.
Did you see or read where the previous chairman of Nestle said that access to water is not a human right?
Yeah, well, Nestle isn't exactly the best example of water charity. I can't believe he said that. It's absolutely ridiculous, and it kind of helps us at Food and Water Watch out, because we've been fighting Nestle for years across the country.
Yeah.
Because they've been going in and stealing people's water in their communities without letting anyone know. And then they turn around and sell it in these plastic containers, 2,000 times the real cost. And it's depriving communities of their water. And it's all a profit thing. I mean, water is the commodity of the future, and it's because yeah. we're going through this climate change thing, we really have to, you know, make sure that people actively get engaged with water politics. I know it's maybe not the sexiest thing out there, but it is so important that we protect our water resources and keep it in public hands and out of private interest hands.
Well, clean water and clean air are two things that human beings and other living things, all living things, can't do without. I just want to make a comment on one thing. I watched a video that you did, and there was a poster about in the back that is like one of my pet peeves. Whenever I speak at a conference or on a panel, they always have bottled water on the table for the panelists. You had something right. about a pitcher of water, and it looks yeah. like a pitcher of water. Talk about that just like for a second, and then give a website where people can get more information about your activism and what your organization is doing.
For sure. So as part of Food and Water Watch, we have a Take Back the Tap program that's been very successful, and we work with college campuses across the country with students and building up student leaders to work on this campaign to get their campuses to kick out bottled water, because we know it's just bad for the environment, it's privatization of water, it's just bad. And so we have all kinds of resources and materials. If you go to takebackthetap.org, you can find out how to free your event from bottled water. You can find out how, as maybe the owner of a restaurant, how you can transition to, providing tap water for your customers. If you're a student, you can find the resources on how to bring this campaign to your campus. And it just has all kinds of research and information just generally for anyone who wants to know how to incorporate more tap water into their life, because we should all pledge to take back the tap. And the website will give you a bunch of, you know, really great resources for that. And then if you're interested in learning more about the tunnels and the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, I would suggest you go to stopthetunnels.org. And then, of course, Food and Water Watch, we have our website. It's foodandwaterwatch.org.
Alexander Nagy, thank you for your work. And, you know, I do have an agenda because I am running for governor, but even if I wasn't, I would be 100% on your side. So let us know if there's anything we can do for you.
All right. Thank you very much, Cindy.
That's our show for this week. I hope you check out, get more information about what Food and Water Watch and Californians for a Fair Water Policy are doing, and get more involved in that issue locally and globally. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer and connection with CPR Metro, Don DeBar, for helping me with the show. I'd like to thank my assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I often forget to thank her, but she does work on the soapbox, on the newsletter, and she helped me book Alexandra for this week. I'd like to thank Alexandra Nagy and Food and Water Watch for their great activism and for agreeing to be on the show. And as always, I want to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.